Grand Canyon University, we believe in equal opportunity, and the American dream starts with purpose. Whether your pursuit involves a bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree, GCU's learning environments are designed for supportive networking and collaboration. With over 330 academic programs, GCU provides a path to help you fulfill your dreams. The pursuit to serve others is yours. Find your purpose at GCU. Private, Christian, affordable. Visit gcu.edu.
This is The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
They're running a strange program, y'all.
Now, here's Frank Morano.
I have admitted that from time to time, I'll make my way towards a craps table. I'll make my way towards a baccarat table. And once in a blue moon, I'll even cast a sports bet or two. Well, what if you could bet on the news? What if you could bet on real-world events, like whether the Federal Reserve is going to cut rates, what the high temperature is going to be in Miami, Oscar nominations, the outcome of Supreme Court cases? Well, on CalSheet, the only federally regulated exchange dedicated to event markets, you can. And I am wondering if in this gambling-obsessed country and culture in which we live, this is going to be the next big thing. Let me bring on board someone who I have yet to see at a baccarat table, at least in the casinos that I frequent, veteran broadcast journalist, best-selling author Dominic Carter. Hello, Dominic.
So nice to be here with you. Just tell me quickly, what's the premise? You said baccarat? Is that I get
baccarat?
Okay.
Yeah.
What's
have to do a lesson tomorrow. I'm going to bring in cards. We'll go over it. I don't even want to tell people how easy of a game it is because when I go to play it, I am the only non-Chinese person, and so I'm not joking.
No, I've seen a lot of Asian Americans are
intimidated,
right?
Because everyone's speaking Chinese to each other. They're all taking notes in Chinese lettering, and everyone says, "Oh, no, I don't understand that kid." Meanwhile, it's almost like betting on a coin flip. It's that easy.
So before you ask me your question, I have another gambling question. So it's in a lot of Hollywood movies where, you know, how do you feel? Well, let's bet on black. Let's bet on red. And they bet on a number, right? But why would you bet on something where you got almost 1,000,001 chance to win?
Well,
I don't get that.
Well, yeah, I mean, for the odds, right? I mean, roulette is...
But you're throwing your money away.
I agree. I mean, it's unless the same
you,
with
unless
lottery
you, unless you bet on black or white.
Yeah,
I mean, black or red.
Well, that is, again, not to go too much down the rabbit hole.
Okay.
But that's what my problem is with roulette, is it's really not a great game. Now, I'll have two or three martinis, and I'll end up at that roulette table anyway. But I always denounce roulette because... It pays as if you have a 1 out of 2 chance, but you don't have a 1 out of 2 chance because of that green, that double zero, you have a 1 out of 3 chance. So every time that you think, okay, it's got to be red, it's got to be black, that green screws you up.
And people actually bet on the number.
Yeah. I hit the number once. It pays, 35-1. So it does pay quite handsomely if you hit the number, but, it is what it is. But let me tell you about this. It's called CalSheet. It is the only federally regulated exchange dedicated to event markets. CalSheet says its user base has grown 5 times since the start of the year, and the Trump-tied trading firm Susquehanna became CalSheet's first dedicated institutional market maker. And what they're saying is that, look, insurance companies and institutional investors already get indirect access to event markets. And basically, this just democratizes the system for everybody. Other people have raised some concerns about the integrity of betting on natural disasters and other markets that could be tied to human suffering. What do you think? I mean, legalized gambling in this day and age is ubiquitous, whether we're talking about sports betting, meme stocks, now real world events. Do you think this is going to catch on?
I think that we're going too far society wise. I mean, just look, Frank, at some of the sports bets. So at what time point will Mahomes throw his first touchdown? At what point will LeBron James, will he score 43 tonight? I think we're going too far in betting on these events. I think that we're creating a further generation not creating a further generation of gamblers. And I think that it's dangerous for America. I really do. For the world.
I think there's a little too much gambling, too. And I say this as a gambler. So do you think something like this, an exchange that lets people bet on real world events, should it be legal?
It shouldn't be legal for money. And you know what's
right, which
funny?
Is what it is.
Right.
Yeah.
Because if you take the money out of it, then nobody's interested.
Right. Right.
And so I just think that there are some things that are dangerous. And we mentioned this yesterday, a slippery slope.
Mm-hmm.
We're going down this slope. And at what point does it stop? I just think it's a bad idea.
Yeah. On the other hand, I mean, I see exactly what you're saying. But on the other hand, what's wrong with you and me placing a bet on who we think President Biden is going to appoint to the Supreme Court, or which Supreme Court justice is going to retire next? What's the harm in that? If people are talking about it, they're making their predictions. What's the bad thing about either of us making a couple of bucks?
Based on the way you set it up, there's nothing wrong with it. But when a person wins 3 times out of 4 and then they say, listen, I got to make up the money to pay my mortgage this month. Now they're taking funds that they need to pay for bills to bet on something like this. It's very dangerous to go down this slope.
Yeah, it certainly can be. If you want to weigh in, please do so. 800-848-9222. Axios referred to this as the everything casino. Are we going to be in an era where we're essentially betting on the news and what's going to happen?
Would you do it?
I don't think so, but, if I have a strong feeling about, I don't know, I wouldn't bet on who's going to win an election because I always predict those inaccurately. But if I had a strong feeling about, who was going to, retire from the Supreme Court, I figure what's the harm in placing a bet? I could see a scenario in which I would.
So Mahomes, the Kansas City Chiefs, 2 years ago, I was up at a casino and I said, okay, I'm going to bet. And I made the bet and I won $500. I bet that Kansas City would win. And I knew they were going to win again this year. And I said, I should go make the bet. Right. And I should have made the bet, but I didn't because I was like, I'm not going. I know you're going to say you can do it online. I was like, I'm not driving 45 minutes to a casino to bet on this game. It just doesn't feel right.
Well, what you just described, I think, is exactly the issue that I have with these legalized electronic sports gambling, because
and that's even worse,
because the fact that there's some sort of disincentive from placing a bet, and again, I've played sports bets before. You have to make that 45 minute drive. Whereas if you just have to go down to your phone and type in who you want to bet on, either to win an election or to win a football game, it leads to people maybe betting with, what is the saying, over their head.
Right. And the PSA, right? You go to a casino, bet with your head, not over it.
Sounds like you spend a lot of time in casinos.
But we know the casinos don't really mean that. Mm-hmm. They mean bet every dime you have. And when we bleed you dry of every dime, bye-bye. If you don't leave, security will show you the door.
So you've been in a casino once or twice, it sounds like. What's your game?
Blackjack.
Blackjack.
But here's why blackjack. But I don't really do it that much anymore. I used to do it and win big money. The reason why I like blackjack, perhaps call me a control freak. I like controlling my own destiny. And that's the game. If you're going to gamble obviously you don't control what cards you get, but you could stay on 12 if you want to. If the deal is showing 12, they've got a hit. Or if the deal is showing 13, you have more than one way to win. And so I'd rather do that than sit up at some slot machine with the senior citizens and the old ladies. I mean, not to knock their game because that's what they do.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever works for them.
But I just think we're going way too far
but
with this.
Betting on current events, that's something that you're not on board with.
I just think that it's a big waste of time. You see, you did it again. You see all these phone calls here.
Well, that's why I have you here, Dominic. You got to, get everybody ginned up, right?
Right. But I'm interested in what people have to say. So, I mean, because I just worry about Americans. I really do. Because,
so, same.
So, Frank, I know you're about to kick me out. But so here's the point, right? So you have a homeowner, mm-hmm. right? And okay, let's say it's a homeowner that has a squatter in their house, and the lawyer says, I want a $5,000 retainer. and you don't have the $5,000 to just start the case. But you know you could make this bet. You only have $3,000. You could make this bet and come up with the $5,000 just to retain the lawyer. But then what happens if you lose that $3,000?
Right, right. I mean, you're exactly right. It's a very tricky proposition. Thank you, my friend. Let's do this again tomorrow.
And so let's make a bet. Only joking.
Tomorrow, I'll bring cards. You teach me card counting, and I'll teach you baccarat.
And we'll both end up in jail card counting.
800-848-9222. Going to get to your calls in just a minute. Let me tell you what's coming up. In just a few minutes, we're going to talk with Batya Ungar Sargon. I am a huge fan of this woman. She is a wonderful writer and a great pundit. You might have seen her on TV or heard her on radio. And she's got a new book out about something that I think is very interesting, which is the working class in this country. She's also very opinionated, very big supporter of Israel in the Middle East. We'll talk about Israel if time permits as well. I'm excited that she's finally coming up on the program. 800-848-9222. Let me hear your thoughts, though, first on betting on the news. What do you think? Would you do it? Should it be legal? Larry in Brooklyn, what do you think?
Okay, first I want to say, by the way, this woman, Batya, is brilliant. She answers the question, why this Trump hatred? She answered that question.
Right, well, so we'll get into it in a minute.
Yeah. Okay, this is the beginning of the end when you bet on this is like the downfall of mankind, the degradation of mankind. Why? Because it says we're willing to exchange. We have our entire sense of civic virtue invested in the right outcomes of issues in society. But if we think that it's not going to happen that way, in other words, if we're pessimistic about our expectations and we decide we're going to put money on it and then we want the bad to happen, actually happen. Like, for example, I happen to think the Democrats are going to cheat and Biden's going to get in again.
Well, but right. You can make that bet if you want to get it. Right, you can make that bet in theory if you wanted. Are you okay with sports betting, Larry?
Sports betting is entirely innocuous. The only danger is, like Dominic said, if you start betting the house, right. you start betting the mortgage.
And that's the case with any kind of betting, right? Larry, thank you. I want to try and get in with at least one more person here before we talk to Batya. 800-848-9222. Robert is in New Jersey. Robert, what do you think about this, betting on news events?
I think betting on news events or betting on anything is extremely dangerous. I'm a compulsive gambler. Okay, I have 3 years of sobriety and recovery. And in my opinion, it's as dangerous as heroin, as cocaine, or as anything else. I literally turned a single-digit deposit into a six-figure jackpot.
Whoa!
Okay, back in 2015. And from 2015 to 2021, I lost everything, including my home, including three cars, my business, my wife, everything. And this is something that needs to be taken seriously. The people laugh when they see the bet over your head don't bet over your head and all that. But this is a serious thing, and this is affecting a lot of professionals. I have graduate level education, and this disease and this illness has no bounds, and it does not discriminate. And that's what I wanted to say. I kind of more or less agree with Dominic. If you can bet and stay, you know, normal, then that's fine. In my case, I can't.
Robert, do you, and I'll give you the last word and then I have to run, do you make any distinction between betting on something like sports or horse racing versus betting on whether the Fed is going to cut interest rates or what the high temperature is going to be in a certain community?
No distinction whatsoever. None. It's all evil. It's all gambling. It's all luck. Lucifer. It's all that.
Thank you, Robert. Appreciate that. Batya Ungar Sargon. We'll talk about America's working class and more straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
Hi, it's Ernie Anastas. You know, your thoughts can affect how you feel, and how you feel can impact your thoughts. Addressing your mind and body connection is the key to improving your overall wellness. Bergen New Bridge Medical Center is the largest hospital in New Jersey, providing comprehensive, equitable, compassionate, and high-quality emergency inpatient and outpatient medical care, plus mental health services and substance use disorder treatment. The Bergen New Bridge team can address your total health needs in one convenient location. Call 201-225-7130. For an appointment or newbridgehealth.org.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's the Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
This is The Other Side of Midnight. I'm Frank Morano. Well, I'm really excited about this. This is a guest that I've been wanting to have on for a while, someone whose writing and punditry I have admired for a long time. Not only is she a very affable yet incredibly intelligent person, not only is she very well-versed on foreign affairs and domestic affairs and has a way of articulating them in a way that even people who are, you know, not bright like me can, but she has written an incredible book about the state of our country. This book ought to be required reading for every presidential candidate or every person that cares about the working class, which, as she makes clear in this book, is the backbone of our country. It's one part policy prescription for where our country should be going, one part description of the politics that have led to the current moment in history, and an incredibly moving portrayal of the actual human beings that make up this entity that we refer to as the working class. I am very, very pleased to welcome to the program opinion editor at Newsweek and the author of the new book, Second Class, How the Elites Betrayed America's Working Men and Women, Batya Ungar-Sargon. Batya, it's great to have you on the program. Thanks for joining me.
Wow, what an introduction, Frank. I'm so humbled by your kind words. Thank you so much for having me. It's truly an honor to be here with you and your listeners.
Well, you're very kind. Hey, so for people that have not followed you, and we want to talk to you about the book in just a moment, but I can't avoid getting your opinion about what's happening in the Middle East, because you've been such a vocal supporter of the state of Israel. You were actually born in Gaza, but to Israeli parents. Is that right? Tell us a little bit about your story.
So actually, that is not correct. It's there are a bunch of AI-generated bios of me.
Right, okay, that's why I'm glad I asked. Good.
Yeah, there's actually no Jews in Gaza. There have been no Jews in Gaza since 2005, but even before that, there weren't any Jews really born in Gaza. I'm obviously American.
Sure. So how does that happen?
Yeah.
Because I that was the first thing that jumped out at me, because, you know, we've met a couple times, and I don't ever remember you mentioning that. I've seen you on television 100 times. I would have thought that would have been the first thing that people asked you about. But how does that happen that there's this fictitious bio of you that's out there?
I would really like to know that as well. The bio also says that I'm worth $3 million, which, trust me, if I was worth $3 million, I wouldn't be a journalist or writing books. I'd be enjoying my life. And it also says that I'm married to the actor Yoan Gruffudd, who I am very honored that AI thinks that I am hot enough to score somebody like Yoan Gruffudd. My husband is wonderful and very hot, but he's not a famous actor.
I'm sorry.
He's a lovely, lovely Ukrainian Jew. And so, you know, there's a lot. It's funny how, like, that misinformation gets out there. And, you know, as somebody who believes in free speech, I never really know what to do with that. I'm not going to go after some website that wants to post lies about me. And honestly, they're all pretty flattering lies. But I was born in Philadelphia and, you know, grew up in Boston and then ended up somehow in New York finally, I guess, as a journalist. And I'm a very, very proud Orthodox Jew. I'm very proud to be American and very proud to be Jewish. And I'm very glad that the vast majority of Americans don't see any contradiction between that, even though there are people on the far left and the far right who are trying to convince you right now that to be a Jewish American is to have dual loyalties, which is obviously like nothing could be further from the truth.
So let's talk about the current situation in Israel. Obviously, the thing that's gotten a lot of news is the horrible killing of these seven aid workers. And this has caused some people to who had been pretty supportive of the Israeli war effort to say now maybe is the time for a ceasefire. Even President Biden, who, while he might not have been totally supportive of Netanyahu, has a pretty long history of being supportive of Israel. Even he basically seemed to imply that this was a bridge too far for him. How do you view the current situation in light of this horrible killing of these seven aid workers?
You know, every death that happens in Gaza, the blood is on Hamas's hands. They started this war with unspeakable atrocities, knowing full well that the price of their horrific actions against Israelis was going to be borne by their own people. Every baby and woman who dies, Hamas celebrates because they then use those deaths of their own people in order to pursue their own political aims. And so, you know, I lay the real responsibility at Hamas's feet, even though Israel did make a mistake in this case, which they admitted to, the way that a democracy that is beholden to a free press tends to do. You know, I really think that, you know, it's complicated. On the one hand, it's very clear that Biden has changed his rhetoric as he has understood that he is currently engaged in a battle for the presidency and feels that his left flank is sort of wavering in support because of his support for Israel. On the other hand, I have to say, you know, Netanyahu has made promises to President Biden that he has not kept. There was never a plan for the day after because Netanyahu is part of in order to keep the government going, he made a coalition with a very far right, two very far right members of his coalition who have opposed sending enough aid into Gaza and have opposed any kind of plan for the day after. So people came to Israel with plans about getting members of Fatah, which is the more moderate Palestinian party, to sort of train in Lebanon so that they could take over the Gaza Strip. And the far right members of Netanyahu's coalition nixed the plan. So, you know, on the one hand, do I like that Biden seems to be setting Middle Eastern policy in order to get, you know, 100,000 votes in Dearborn, Michigan? No. But on the other hand, you know, has Israel been, you know, perfect in terms of the diplomacy and the diplomatic side of things and helping its ally Israel give it the cover that it needs? No, because of internal pressures. Now, again, none of this compares to the real villain of the story, which is neither Biden nor Bibi Netanyahu, but Hamas, who are mass raping, immolating sadists. And like everything ultimately lies at their feet. And anybody who cannot see that and cannot admit that is godless. I mean, it's so obvious. I mean, the stakes of good versus evil could not be clearer. But we can still analyze what's going on in terms of, you know, American policy and in terms of Israeli policy.
So with that comparison of American policy and Israeli policy, a lot of folks that may not have followed the Middle East situation are seeing the possibility of reprisal from countries like Iran or even what's happening in Yemen with the Houthis. And they may say, all right, what does the United States need this for? I guess speak to those people if you can, even if Israel is ethically, morally and legally justified in doing what they need to do to root out terrorism in Gaza or anywhere else that may be a threat to them. Explain to American audiences what America gets from this alliance with Israel and its support of Israel.
You know, Frank, I'm so grateful to you for asking me that question, because I think that is a totally legitimate question for an average American to ask. Why should I be paying for this fight? Why should I be paying for aid to Israel? Like, that's a totally legitimate question. And I want to really stress that, because I think a lot of people are drawing a parallel with Ukraine. And, you know, I as somebody who just reported a book on the working class and spent a year interviewing working class mm-hmm. Americans, I reported the book before October 7th. So I didn't ask as much about Israel. It wasn't really top of mind. But most of the people I spoke to, in fact, if not all, whether they were Democrats or Republicans, if they were working class, they did not understand why we were sending billions of dollars to Ukraine.
Right. Right.
And I totally understand people asking the same thing about Israel. I personally think that the aid to Israel actually has hurt Israel more than it has helped us. It's not really aid to Israel. What it is basically a voucher that Israel has to spend on American military equipment. So it's basically like a voucher that the United States taxpayer gives to Israel to spend with Raytheon, for example, mm-hmm. to buy American-made weapons. So the money ends up being spent in our economy. But what you have to understand is that Israel has given up the opportunity to develop its own military-industrial complex as a result of taking this aid. So honestly, I think that America has benefited more from this aid package than Israel has. Here's what the benefit is. For starters, every weapon that Israel purchases from the United States with this aid money, it has improved on and then given us back that improvement. You know, Israel is known as the startup nation. Its technology is unsurpassed. And so we get that technology for free back when it improves on our weapons. We get the kind of intelligence sharing that you cannot buy for love or money that we get from our ally Israel. And at the end of the day, Frank, the Houthis are not fighting Israel. They're fighting the West. They're fighting the United States through Israel. And the same thing is true of Iran. Israel, for them, is a proxy for the United States. And in many ways, Israel is literally the frontier fighting American battles for us. Now, that's how I see it. I've heard from people who have been in these classified meetings. They have described to me the level of detail and intelligence Israel has given the United States. And I can tell you the lives, the American lives that have been saved based on that intelligence.
Wow.
But I don't need anybody to take my word for it. If the American taxpayer says, we don't feel that this is in our interest, I respect that. I don't have any problem with Americans voting for politicians who say, you know what, it's enough. We have our own problems here. We don't need to be funding Israel anymore. Like, I don't think that's anti-Semitic. I don't have a problem with that. I think it's wrong in terms of America's strategic interests because there is a new axis of evil. It is the Chinese Communist Party and Iran and the woke universities, and they are all sort of in concert trying to destroy America. And all of them hate Israel because they see Israel as a representative of American might and American values in the Middle East. Now, that may not be convincing to the average American, and I will defer to that at the end of the day because democracy is the most important thing. And in a democracy, what people want, they get. You know, but I have to say, as a Jew, I cannot help but feel moved to tears by the fact that the American people stand by Israel and the fact that American Christians, uniquely in the history of humanity, have created a religious existence that was not anti-Semitic and the opposite. Their religious praxis involves the protection of Jews and Israel. And I think that's incredibly beautiful. I think that's a deeply, deeply important part of what it means to be an American. But I respect people who don't see things that way. And I will try my hardest to convince them. And we'll debate it. And that's totally fine, because that is what a healthy democracy looks like.
That's one of the many things that I love about you is not just your analysis of policy issues, but the temperament in which you accept others that may disagree. And one day I'm going to persuade you to come in and spend 4 hours with me in the middle of the night. We'll see. We'll work that out, because I'd love to do an hour just on the Middle East and an hour just on Ukraine. But I want to focus on your book, which I think is terrific and everybody should read. By the way, if people are just tuning in, we're talking with Batya Ungar-Sargon. She is an opinion editor at Newsweek and the author of the new book, Second Class, How the Elites Betrayed America's Working Men and Women. Before we get into some of the solutions and some of the problems that working class America is facing, Batya, a lot of folks that may disagree with some of your conclusions, if they're on the right, they're going to say you're a closet leftist. If they're on the left, they're going to say you're just another right right winger. How do you characterize your own political views, just so folks could kind of guard themselves against any propaganda that we're trying to spoon feed them?
I would call myself a populist, which means I believe in the wisdom of the American people. And again, coming back to this thing about being Jewish, I think if I was European, if I was British, if I lived in a country that had, you know, 1,000 years of blood-soaked, you know, land where the working class had, you know, just a 1,000 years worth of leaders using anti-Semitism to whip up populist support, I would not be a populist. The American people are so deeply good, moderate, tolerant, like beyond tolerant. I cannot understand how anybody looks at the American people and does not think like there's never been a greater country on earth. And we need to make sure that the average American, the 70% of Americans who are working class or middle class, can have their voices heard because they are incredible, incredible people. And for my book, Second Class, I traveled around the country and interviewed working class people of all creeds, of all races, of all religions, of all political persuasions, in many, many, many industries. And I just found this remarkable, remarkable tolerance and extreme moderateness on all issues. We have so much to learn from these people. And that's really what the book is about.
The perception and what's been reported in many different places over the last 3 to 4 years, I guess maybe going back to just after the 2016 election, is that even though historically the Democrats have been viewed as the party of the working class, the party of things like labor unions and fighting for the worker, and the Republicans have been viewed as a party of wars, free trade, and tax cuts, the voters have started to turn that equation on its head, and that we're now seeing more working class, especially non-college educated voters, migrate towards Trump and the Republicans, and the so-called elitists and the elites migrate towards the Democrats. Is that actually what's happening? Is that what you're seeing in the data?
So I would say the working class is very much gravitating towards Trump. They really hate the GOP. There's one thing that working class conservatives hate more than the Democratic Party, and it's the Republican Party. Mm. They really feel that they have been pimped out by the Republican Party, and that their interests have been sold out on the altar of sort of the cultural issues, where they agree with the Republican elites about most cultural issues, but they feel that those elites have sort of pimped them out on the altar of, exactly as you said, tax cuts, foreign wars, and free trade. And Trump represents the opposite of all of that. He represents, you know, tax cuts for the middle class, no more foreign wars, and a trade war with China, you know, and an American economy that really caters to the working class. If the Republican Party wants to keep these voters after Trump, they really need to do a deep think about what's going on. And you can see that they're not ready to have that conversation, because the entire donor class of the GOP united around Nikki Haley in the primary, right? And she outspent Trump 2-1. He still won. But that's sort of where the sort of pre-Trump Republican Party was. And obviously, the donor class is desperate to get back to that version of the GOP. Unfortunately, the working class is not going to have any of that. And I, you know, it's just such a shame, because you look at how Trump is doing with black men, with Hispanics. It is historic what this man is pulling off. Mass defection from the Democrats, who are now catering to a college educated elite. Like, the entire Trump changed the entire game. I mean, he just changed the entire game. And yet there is so much energy being expended on both sides to obscure this fact from view.
There are going to be folks that will acknowledge Trump's mastery at speaking to the working class and to blue collar voters, but say that his policies don't actually match up with his rhetoric. For instance, you know, he'll speak about, you know, trade and immigration and, you know, be an anti-globalist agenda. And then the cornerstone of his economic economic agenda is a tax cut which does benefit the very same elites that he railed against when he was running for president a great deal, as well as corporations. And then he'll appoint folks like Steve Mnuchin to run the economy, Gary Cohen, who clearly you could see serving in a Jeb Bush administration. Then the military perspective, you have a situation where, you know, he definitely says the right things about foreign wars, but then appoints folks like John Bolton. Is there a dichotomy between the things that Trump says and between the things that he's actually doing?
It's a very important question. To me, the answer is no. To most working class people I interviewed, the answer is no. They really feel that he put money in their pockets. The first administration was a bit of a mess, but I mean, the guy had no experience in politics, right? I mean, he was really shooting from the hip. I don't think he had a clear sense of what to do with all of his success. And I think it took him 4 years to understand why he had succeeded to the degree that he did. He managed to accomplish a lot, though. The most important things, the two things that he accomplished that you just can't take away from him. The first was securing the border. He simply changed the conversation about immigration. And when he showed up and started saying, immigrants are stealing wages from the working class, everyone called him a racist. I mean, on both sides, they called him bigot. It's true. It's something that every working class person can tell you. And he simply changed the conversation. And now you're seeing Joe Biden is going to have to re-implement the Trump executive orders that he undid on day one in office. I mean, it's really amazing. The second thing he did was he changed the conversation on trade. When Trump showed up, there was a handshake agreement between both parties that we should be having totally free trade, NAFTA style, with Mexico and China. And we should be exporting all of these great American jobs to build up China and Mexico's middle class. And Trump just completely changed the game on that. He said, we're going to have free trade with China. We're going to have a trade war and tariffs. We're going to protect our workers. And now, I mean, the idea of NAFTA or something like that being signed into law today is unthinkable. Right. Both parties are now rushing to convince the working class that they are going to be tougher on free trade. And to the extent that Janet Yellen is screwing that up is the extent to which Biden is going to be losing the election. So, and that, I really don't think it's fair to say he didn't deliver. I mean, what could be more important than trade and wages to the working class?
Let's talk about some of the other policy areas beyond trade, immigration, and foreign wars that would be beneficial to the working class. You have spent a lot of time thinking about policy and even going to the people that you profile in your book and asking their opinion of certain policy proposals. What is the prescription for getting working class America to be on the same path forward and upward that the upper middle class and the elites are?
So it's the most important question today. I will say that every single one of the policy proposals in the book is totally nonpartisan and should be a no-brainer for either party that wants to speak to working class Americans. The first is securing the border and limiting immigration. It's the most obvious thing, supply and demand. The more workers there are, the less they can command in terms of wages. You bring in 15 million people who don't speak English, they are going to immediately reduce the wages of people who work with their hands for a living. It's the most obvious thing. So number one is controlling immigration. Number two, vocational training in high school. We have a massive dearth of skilled trades folks in this country. And the skilled trades are one of the best pathways to the American dream for the working class. You can make a lot of money as a contractor or a plumber or an electrician. These are really, really good jobs with upward mobility. And yet, thanks to President Obama, we totally defunded vocational training on the idea that everyone was going to go to college. And if you don't have a college degree, you don't deserve the American dream because you're not a Democrat, FYI, right? So I would say, immigration, vocational training, getting rid of zoning laws that allows rich liberals to prevent duplexes being built in nice neighborhoods, which are really nice starter homes for working class families. And the reason why there's a housing crunch and why so many working class people can't afford a home in the American dream, getting rid of degree requirements for jobs that don't require skills that you learn in college, getting rid of software that weeds out people who don't have a college degree for jobs that they would be amazing at. All of these things would go a long way towards helping working class Americans. And then the last thing I would say is, you know, the most common combination of views I met among the working class, whether they were Democrats or Republicans, was the desire for a total moratorium on immigration and some sort of government-backed catastrophic health care. If the Republican Party would be willing to talk about healthcare and take on the healthcare cartels, the hospital administrators, the insurance companies and the pharmaceutical companies, they would have a ruling majority and the Democrats would never win again.
Let me end with this because you profile a lot of interesting people in your book. Let me ask you about two of them because they're pretty similar, even though they vote in different ways. Tell me about Amy and Linda, what they do, who they are and how they vote and what it says about America.
Oh my gosh, I'm so glad that you asked me about this. This is one of my favorite things that happened, which was I found that like there is huge consensus in the working class. Whether you vote Democrat or Republican, if you're working class, you basically agree on the issues. And the best example of this is Linda and Amy. So Linda drives a truck for Amazon. She delivers Amazon packages. She says it's the best job she's ever had. She lives in West Virginia. She doesn't own a home right now. She used to with her husband, but he lost his job to NAFTA. They shipped his manufacturing job overseas and they lost their home. And it is her hope one day to be able to own a double wide somewhere in West Virginia. Amy is a gay certified nurse's aide who lives in Florida. She's married to a woman. Amy voted for Joe Biden, although her wife voted for Donald Trump because she believed he couldn't be bought and she liked that he put money in her pocket. But honestly, Amy and Linda, I couldn't find a single policy idea that they did not agree on. Both of them were appalled at the billions of dollars we've sent to Ukraine. Both of them are appalled that there are homeless veterans. Both of them are very pro-gay, but very worried about the transgender agenda. So Amy told me she thought that a parent who brings a child to a drag show should be put in prison. And they both feel very upset that there are so many people who are scamming the system as they see it and living off of welfare. But hardworking people that they know who work and work and work can't get the help that they need. There was so little that distinguished these two women from each other. And that is America. That is what America looks like. Americans are so much more united than they are divided. It is only the elites who are divided because they get a lot of money and a lot of power off of trying to convince Americans to hate each other.
Bhatia, we're going to have to end it there. I really appreciate the conversation. I would love to get you in studio sometime soon and do a whole hour or two on a wide variety of issues, foreign and domestic. I want to encourage everybody to check out your new book, Second Class, How the Elites Betrayed America's Working Men and Women. Thank you.
God bless you, Frank. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. If you want to comment on any portion of our conversation, you're welcome to give me a call at 1-800-848-9222. That's 800-848-9222. This is The Other Side of Midnight. Straight ahead.
The Other Side of Midnight. Other Side of Midnight with Frank Morano.
I keep a close watch on this heart of mine. I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine, I walk the line. Mm-hmm.
right, Johnny Cash singing Walk the Line. This is a bumper music selection from our listener of the week, Hank Purpura, longtime listener of mine, has shown up to multiple events. I did a screening of The Godfather. He came all the way out from a different state to come, came to multiple New Year's Eve events that I had, came to and participated in a calamad eating contest that I had. He even on New Year's Day one year participated in a vodka taste test on air. I think the video of that is still on my Facebook page. You could check it out, facebook.com/MoranoFan. Just look under videos. And he is home after 3+ months in the hospital and another couple of weeks in rehab. And he's doing great, listening to the show, doing a great job. So, Hank, thanks for a little Johnny Cash. Can't beat that. Going to get to your calls in just a moment. 800-848-9222. First, what do Willie Mays, Willie McCovey, and Frank Morano have in common? Well, if you're a baseball fan, you already know the answer. We are all number 44. Willie Mays and Willie McCovey both wore number 44. I think Hank Aaron might have worn number 44 as well. And the Talkers Heavy 100 came out yesterday, and I was listed. Not only did I make the list, but I was concerned, one, that I wouldn't make the list, but I was concerned that my status would go down. I was number 65 last year. This year, I am number 44. And so I not only retained my spot on the list, but I moved up a couple of notches, which is nice. Yes, Hank Aaron was number 44. So that's that. Hank Aaron, Willie Mays, and Willie McCovey, and Frank Morano, all number 44. So thank you to Michael Harrison and the good folks at Talkers Magazine. I really appreciate that. And I am humbled sincerely to be mentioned in the same breath and on the same list as some of the greatest talk show hosts in America and some of the greatest of all time, quite frankly. So thank you. I appreciate that. And I think there was only one overnight fellow that was ahead of me, which is nice. Most of the other folks were not overnight shows that made the list. All right. 800-848-9222, 800-848-9222. Let me begin with Elizabeth. What's on your mind, Elizabeth?
I'll tell you, I'm sorry I don't know the name of the woman who wrote the book, the great book. It sounds wonderful. Mm-hmm. But she's Israeli and she's Jewish.
She is Jewish, and yes.
She's Jewish. And we have Gaza. And sometimes we forget, and I hope she's listening, we forget about Hashem. You know who Hashem is?
I do indeed.
And I felt, because of what's going on in Gaza and what's going on in our country with all of this killing and all of this cash bail nonsense, that somehow we've left Hashem out of our thinking. And I just, when she started talking, I just felt this need to bring this up, that it's time that our country got back to basics. And this is basic. This is how we survive. This business with cash bail and all this other nonsense, we're leaving out the most important component of our lives.
Right.
And that's Hashem.
I guess I'm not clear on what we're doing that has anything to do with what we spoke about in the conversation.
No, but we're talking about the working class, the working force, how people are working together, how people are trying to bring unity among people, trying to work together as a team, work together as a group. And then you have simultaneously what's going on with Hamas in Israel, because she's Israeli. And I'm Jewish, and my mind is always there. So I was just trying to remind people that when you're talking about working class people, when you're talking about people who have different ideas, that they have to know how to get along.
Right. Well, that's I agree with that, Elizabeth. Certainly, I think that should go across the board. No doubt about it. 800-848-9222. David is in Brooklyn. Hi, David.
Yes, on that very same subject of what the young lady just said, that if we take God completely out of the picture and we think we can make our lives work perfectly without bringing God's wishes into our lives, no matter what we're going to do to get along, to make the right decisions, they can all fall apart instantly when we don't take that key element into a discussion. And the key element that has been avoided for reasons that I don't know, both in your conversations and all conversations on television, radio.
Well, I mean, what did you want me to say, David? What did you want me to say? Okay, I mean, we're talking about...
We never ask, what is this murderous religion that allows people to go in from one country to another and murder women, children, pregnant women, rape girls, etc.? And we all avoid talking about how the religion of Quran has been somehow taken away from what it used to be, and it's been taken all over by terrorist organizations.
David, thank you. I mean, it's a little bit of a lengthy rabbit hole that we would go down with that conversation, David. But I would just, first of all, I'd like to know what the good old days of Islam were that you were referring to. Second, there's a lot of Muslims that have very little tolerance for terrorism. People like the King of Jordan, people like General al-Sisi of Egypt. I mean, you wouldn't exactly call them terrorist enabling. You know, I misspoke. I must have confused Willie Mays and Hank Aaron. Willie Mays was number 24. I should know that because the Mets retired his number. It was Hank Aaron and Reggie Jackson that were number 44. My error. Keep asking questions.
This is Greg Kelly for Priority Gold. What does it mean to be America's precious metals dealer? It means that you're in touch with the hearts and minds of those who love this country, value our freedom, and want to protect the future. Priority Gold is that precious metals dealer. They've helped thousands of Americans back their retirement with solid gold and silver. Call Priority Gold at 888-506-6439. Receive free shipping, free storage, a free investment guide, and one of the best purchase experiences in the industry. Call now or go to PriorityGold.com.